Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And I am Ben Bolin. I write some videos here at HowStuffWorks.com and also hang out with Scott when we talk about things that go fast or things that we think can go faster. I feel like that's a little bit of a generalization, but it comes to bear quite often. Mm-hmm. I looked back, and it's been a fair amount of time since we did a podcast about racing or race cars.
No kidding.
I know. I was surprised too, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we should
do. Let's correct
do we
that.
Have one? I don't want to.
We can correct that.
Let's
we've got
correct
a,
it.
We've got a good piece of listener mail here, and I think we'll take a suggestion.
Oh man, I love suggestions.
Skyler. Skyler is from just outside of Ottawa, Ontario.
Okay.
And actually in Spencerville, Canada. Anyways, Skyler wrote in three times. Count them, one, two, three times.
One,
and,
two, three.
And I finally answered on the third time. Thank you, Skyler, for keeping on me there. Because I try to get back to everybody, or at least we answer them here on the show or something.
We do try to get back to you.
I feel bad that I didn't answer this right away, because we are going to use this topic.
And we're going to make it up to you today, Skyler.
It's not bad. He tried in September, October, and then finally in November, I said, all right, here, let me tackle this. So it was a long time coming. So Skyler wanted to know about rally cars. He's interested in, looks over the months here, Skyler is interested in buying one, wants to know what a rally car is, also is just interested in what it takes to make a rally car. What are the differences between a road car and a rally car?
All good questions.
So yeah, they are. So we'll just try to cover most of that here, or if not all of it, and I guess we can go from there.
Your persistence has paid off, Skyler.
Yes.
And you've convinced us.
Sorry it took so long, really.
We love a good rally car episode.
Yep. So here we go. We're going to dig in with just a basic overview of what is rallying to begin with.
You're reading my mind.
It's basically just a race against the clock. Doesn't sound all that exciting, but trust me, it is. If you've ever seen a rally car in action, you know just how exciting these can be. It's an off-road race. It's intensely exciting because there's jumps involved. There's mm-hmm. usually they're driving through the trees, they're driving through through rivers. There's gravel, there's snow, there's mud, there's sand.
Is it a circuit?
Nope, not a circuit. It's an open circuit, I guess. You'd go from stage to stage, and you're measured either against the clock or you try. Well, it's always against the clock. It's either absolute speed. Mm-hmm. You try to get to the stage first in the shortest amount of time. Or you try to hit a target time, and that's a different type of rally, but we'll talk about that too.
Okay.
There's an optimum time you're trying to hit. So this is really all about precision, no matter how you look at it, because you have to be extremely precise to drive through the forest mm-hmm. at 120 miles an hour.
Precision and punctuality.
Exactly. Yeah. And the crazy part. Okay. So there's a driver. We know that, right?
Of course.
And they have to be good on all surfaces. They have to be kind of an all-around good driver on everything that we just mentioned. I mean, mud, snow, ice, whatever. Always off-road, though. But there's also a co-driver. And this is somewhat unique to this series.
Yeah, what's a co-driver?
A co-driver, this is pretty interesting, something that I could never do. Do you ever get a headache in the car when you're reading a map or trying to read a book or do whatever you would be doing in the passenger seat?
I don't, but from what I understand, it's quite common.
Oh, you don't? Okay, you mm-hmm. don't have the motion sickness thing?
Nope.
Okay. Co-driver, I would. I can't look down and read, and I just have a hard time not paying attention to what's going on around mm-hmm. me. So if I'm in the passenger seat, I have to be looking out the window. A co-driver, they not only do they look out the window, they also have to read a map along the way, and they have to make calculations of where they are on the course, the time they need to keep, the speed they should be going, what's coming up next. They have to be alert to the point where they know what's ahead, one, two, three turns ahead.
200 yards ahead, hard left.
Exactly. Exactly.
Followed by immediate right.
Exactly.
Or
yeah, it's like the navigation system in your car, I guess. That tells you when to turn. Only, imagine you're at race speed going through a forest, uphill or downhill on gravel. So,
I wouldn't want to drive the race car. I guess then you would have to drive, and I would have the map, which I'm fine with.
It's okay, and the driver could do this himself, but he can go faster if he knows what's ahead or what's beyond this. You know that in 200 yards you need to make a slight right, mm-hmm. and that way he can set himself up right now for that turn and know that it's coming and when to expect it, how quickly that's going to come. Usually they give a direction followed by another direction, like in 200 yards is a slight right followed by a hard left.
Okay, so it's like I guess the whole point is to add some safety but also to shave seconds off of that ultimate time.
Exactly, yeah, because you can go faster knowing what's ahead. Now, one thing that they can't control is wildlife. They can't control, you know, that may cross the road, because you're talking about old logging roads or just country roads, you know, that are out in the middle of nowhere. It could be anything from elk or deer, or turtles, raccoons.
Oh, man.
A horse. Yeah, I've seen a horse hit. Yeah, in the
desert. It's actually on the blog, so yeah. Anybody wants to visit that can check it out.
Yeah, just a quick keyword search. We'll find a rally car hits a horse or something like that.
Yes.
Terrible video, but it shows you just how quickly something like mm-hmm. this can happen. The other thing is just nature itself. There could be a tree that falls in the road. It could have been a rock slide overnight.
Or landslide. Yeah. Hard rain could have made part of the track difficult to navigate.
Exactly, right. And you don't get any forewarning on this stuff. Other than they're allowed to take the course early and do some reconnaissance work. And I don't. It varies, you know, by group. You know, mm-hmm. how much you're, or how early you're allowed to go, and how many times you're allowed to drive it, and what type of notes you're allowed to take, etc. Hmm. So you can do some reconnaissance and find out what the course is like, because you know there may be 1,000 turns over hundreds of miles that you have to take, and you only see it once. So you know once you're past it, you just have to worry about the next one. You don't have to worry about coming back to it ever again, because you'll never will. Mm-hmm.
Unless you compete the next year.
Exactly. And also, you don't... that's right. Even coming back the next year would be difficult, because it may have changed due to mm-hmm. weather. Again, it may have washed out at a certain place, and there's a dip where there wasn't one before. So there's a lot of things you need to be aware of. Also, you need to... when you're doing this type of reconnaissance work, you know, you can check out your odometer readings, make sure that the directions are accurate. Mm-hmm. So the co-driver and the driver, you know, talking together, you know, how they're going to handle each section of the course. It's really kind of interesting how, you know, you get prepared for a race, and mm-hmm. you don't race head to head with other cars either. So you're not in a big pack of vehicles like you are in other motorsports where you're trying to battle with another car. The only reason that would happen is if one was held up, and backed off, or somehow was running slower than you and you had passed them, or maybe you had stalled and you had to fix whatever it was on the mm-hmm. road and then get back underway. They're normally staggered. There's a time that goes, a time distance between them,
right.
So that there's plenty of room between them. You wouldn't see the car in front of you or behind you.
Yeah, car number one leaves, and then a certain amount of time later, car number two leaves.
Yeah, it may be a minute, it may be 2 minutes. I don't know how long they gap them in each series, but...
probably differs.
There's it depends on, I guess, who's faster, really, because, sometimes that passing does happen.
Now, Scott, when we first started kicking around this idea, one of the things that you told me might throw us for a doozy was the different types of rally cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not all the same across the board all over the world. There's different types of rally racing and different types of rally cars and what's allowed. And I don't know if I want to get into all the rules of what every vehicle has. You know, like if it can't be more than 2 liters, it has to be turbocharged with an anti-lag system, you know, that type of thing. These are
specific definitions.
A lot of them. And a lot of them have to have sequential gearboxes. They have to, there's a lot of requirements for certain series. And I'm just looking at two or three right here. There's the World Rally Championship, which is the WRC, mm-hmm. World Rally Cars race in the World Rally Championship, and that's the ones that you see going really all over the world. We'll talk about that in a minute too. But there's just a road rally car, which has to be a street legal car, which are run on open public roads, and those are timed events, and they you have to maintain the posted speed limits, and you have to obey laws, and you'll find that that's pretty interesting. Actually, we'll get to that in a minute too.
So if you're in one, and if you're in one of these road races,
yeah,
I'm interrupting, but of course the idea is, if the posted speed limit is 45,
yeah,
and then it goes up to 55, but then it goes down to 35, mm-hmm. You have to obey those?
You have to obey that. And now, it doesn't sound like much fun, but I'll tell you about it in a minute. Because there's an element to this that makes it fun. It sounds... I agree. I think it sounds like, well, what... Is that really a race? That seems like right. You're just going to pick something up.
I wasn't going to say. Yeah.
But I'll get to that in a
second,
too.
I'm jumping the gun. I'm jumping the shark.
Now, there's also Rally America, which is our version, you know, because it's not the European version of this, you know, that I just mentioned.
We have to be different.
Yeah, a little bit. But I don't know. It's just there's a lot of different groups that have different rules and restrictions, and the cars are all different and set up different. So you want to talk about let's talk about the big guys.
Yeah, well, actually, let's do the greatest hits. Yeah.
How about this? I just changed my mind right in the middle of the sentence there.
Did you?
I did. Yeah.
Where are we
going? Let's talk about the road rallies first.
Road rallies?
We'll go to the big daddy.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That way, you know, save something for the end.
Yeah, I like that. Big finish.
Sorry, I just changed it up on you there.
Oh, no, that's
you
great.
You adapt well.
Hey, that's my...
You're like a chameleon.
You know, what's funny is I'm partially colorblind, yeah. So to me, chameleons are just lizards.
just some kind of animal runner. Okay, so... These are also called road rallies. They're also another name for them is TSD rallies, which are time, speed, and distance rallies.
Okay.
These are the fundamental of this is that it's based on skill and precision and just being exact in every stage of this race. You know, if the posted speed. Now these are again public roads, posted speed limits. You have to obey the rules. Cars are street legal. There may be other vehicles on the road with you. The idea is that you're scored based on how close you are to your ideal time at each stage. So you're measured at different stages, and you're given, I don't know if it's, you know, if you receive penalties or not, I'm just not sure, but, again, it's skill and precision. It's really essential. Teamwork is the biggest thing here, that the co-driver tells the driver where he is, where he's at, or he or she is, and how to, you know, need to back it off here. We need to pick it up a little bit in the next section. And what makes this exciting is the choice of roads. It's not run on, you know, this doesn't go through Main Street USA.
Sure.
This is something that, you know, they'll find interesting roads to be on. So you may be on an old logging road. You may be, which, you know, goes through the woods and is uphill most of the way.
Right.
Gravel, of course. And you may end up on an icy road. You may end up on a road that's, you know, very deep sand. You may end up on, you know, just these crazy roads and conditions. And a lot of times they schedule these events at night, so there's very little traffic on the road. So that you may be in an event that starts at midnight. And, you know,
wow,
that's what the, you know, kind of the interesting angle in this is that it's nighttime, and sure the speed limit's 55, but you know this road also has 83 turns on it, and you know it's a dirt road, or it's icy, and or maybe it's a winter time and there may be ice, you don't know.
So there's
but
so
it's darkness, you know, all, everything.
Darkness and extraordinary roads.
It's that. I mean, it could be any number of conditions in between as well. So it's the road choice and the road course, I guess, that you know, the distance and the complexity of that road that makes the interesting part of that.
Before we move on to anything else, I've got to ask, you say that what I'm hearing you tell me, Scott, is that the drivers are graded on how close they come to their ideal time.
Mm-hmm.
Do they receive a penalty for coming in under that time?
I believe they do. I think that there's penalty because that means you're breaking the rules. There's an ideal time. So if you were
because the ideal time is calculated on not breaking the speed limit.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
So it's calculated based on the course and the speed and the distance, and there's a lot that goes into it. But if you don't hit that ideal time, you're penalized in some way, and it's just a time thing. I mean, so at the end, you want to be dead even with your ideal time.
This is one of the few races where being faster could actually lose the race for you.
It could, yeah. You need to show restraint. You need to you need to be able to maintain the speed that you're supposed to for this. Now, if you lose a little bit of time, you got to understand, you know, that your co-pilot may have to do some quick calculations and figure out how quickly you need to go in the next section in order to make up that time, or how much you need to slow down in order to manage it just right to make it to the next stage at the right time, the ideal time again.
Does that hold out for the WRC?
No, this is just a speed, you know, you got to get to the next, next checkpoint the fastest. So it's an overall speed event, really.
If we start and I'm not saying that we are going to start a rally race team, but if we do, Scott, I think that we should probably go for WRC.
Really?
Yeah.
But what part of the bill are you going to kick in here?
What part of the bill?
Yeah, how many? What percentage?
Well, financially, maybe not that much.
Oh,
but,
really?
But morals?
Just lend your world-famous name?
Expertise, know-how.
Yeah?
I don't know if my name is world-famous enough.
Okay.
But, well, I guess that depends on how much it is.
All right, for a world rally car.
All right.
$1 million is not unheard of for one car.
Well, it will be unheard of for me to kick in that much money. I can't.
Even, what about half? Thing. Even half? That's okay.
Well, we'll talk about it. We'll work it out. I probably couldn't.
Yeah. Just so you know. Yeah, I'll say we'll work it out too, right? Yeah.
I was thinking more $20, $25.
No. Like, this is like $1 million per vehicle. And they say that, now this is from, before I open my mouth, I should have figured out what it was, but I believe it's from rallycars.com.
Okay.
World rally cars are $1 million each, and that does not get you any spares. So that means you don't get any extra engines, no extra tires, no anything like that. This is just one vehicle. You have to take care of all the maintenance, everything else yourself.
Jeez.
It's just a vehicle.
Who's making these?
These are the manufacturers in the series are manufacturers like Peugeot,
okay.
Ford, okay. Well, a long time ago, Lancia. I don't know if they're still making, you know, the rally cars or not. There's a lot of different manufacturers that make these special mm-hmm. rally cars, world rally cars. Now, they do have to be based on a production vehicle. So there's a minimum production run of 2,500 units. So the rally car has to be built on that platform or resemble that vehicle.
Okay.
But in reality, it's completely gutted. I mean, you're looking at just bare sheet metal. They strip everything off of it in order to make a rally car. So, Skylar, here's where you're talking about, the difference in the rally car and your car, maybe, would be that, this one is totally gutted, and a race shop or whoever, is doing this, either the manufacturer or an upfitter, is the one who's installing very specific rally car components to your vehicle.
It's like the Bionic Man of cars.
Exactly, right? Exactly, yeah. I mean, it takes around approximately 700 hours of work to make one rally car. And a lot of it is making it stiffer and stronger. So it says here that most world rally cars could support the weight of 10 road cars.
Wow.
So you're talking about an intensely stiff suspension on these things, and remember, they're jumping through the woods, and mm-hmm. they're taking all kinds of abuse for hundreds and hundreds of miles, days on end. They have to be this tough to stand up.
They probably just break otherwise.
Yeah, so there's no chance. I mean, that you're going to take your street vehicle out there and expect to survive. I mean, your vehicle mm-hmm. expect to survive in this type of race. It just wouldn't happen. So, again, 700 hours of work in order to make a factory prepared race vehicle. They do have a restrictor plate on the intake that limits them to about 300 horsepower. And I've seen numbers that go as high as about 340 on that. So it does a little bit higher now. They're finding ways around to make a little more horsepower. But where these things are I guess, the most powerful is the torque. And the torque is really critical for a rally car. The numbers, they gave me a Newton meter number here, but I should have converted. I didn't. But it's about 600 Newton meters of torque. Just to give you an example of how powerful that is, now these are the Subaru or Peugeot or Citroen or whoever, Ford. 600 Newton meters, that's the same torque output as a Ferrari Enzo.
Wow.
And that's on gravel. So you're talking about a rally car that will accelerate from 0 to, they give it again in kilometers.
Sure.
0 to 62 miles per hour, which is 100 kilometers, in 3 seconds on gravel. So that's incredible. I mean, or dirt or any surface. They say any surface, a rally car will accelerate from 0 to 62 in 3 seconds. So that's like a supercar speed.
Yeah.
But you're on this slippery surface. These cars are remarkable, I mean, as far as the torque output.
Now, people, I would say, are people who are investing this amount of money into this vehicle, they're usually sponsors, right? And there's a racer there's a team of racers that are driving it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's big name sponsors. A lot of them are manufacturers, the manufacturer of the vehicles themselves. I'm sure that there are other, in the World Rally Championship, it's usually about, the manufacturers. But in the smaller events like what we're talking about here, you know, you may have somebody that's running that's, you know, sponsored by a hardware store or sponsored by somebody that, you know, wants to pay for one set of tires for the year. So they give you, you know, you give them a little space on the fender with a sticker, you know, that type of thing. So the sign shop maybe that provides your graphics.
Right.
It's dramatically different from the World Rally Car Championship and, you know, what you'd find on like a typical road rally that's run in, you know, Metro Atlanta or in Detroit or wherever. Just a couple more things about the cars here, and then we're done. But the speeds, we haven't really talked about the speeds. We said, you know, how quickly they get up to 60, top speeds of around 125 miles per hour are not unheard of in the series. So 125 miles per hour through the woods, over jumps, you know, sliding around turns, you're drifting, et cetera. That's
the part where the co-driver says, gun it, we're on a straightaway.
And the fans. The fans, we haven't talked about them.
Oh, we got to talk about the fans,
Scott. This is really about the last thing I've got about them. But the fans, I've seen this on television. I've never been to a rally event. On television, I always see the fans lining the course. I mean, right on the edge of the road.
Mm-hmm.
The car is up in the air sideways, and it lands, you know, within feet of the fans. It seems absurdly dangerous. What do you think?
I think that they have a tremendous amount of trust in the people driving the vehicles. Probably more than I would have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how much is that picture worth, I guess, that you get of the car in the air?
Right.
It's interesting, and I can understand the excitement, but I think there's a little bit of self-preservation that would kick in and make me step back a little bit from that, or, you know, stand on the other side of the jump. I also see them on the outside edge of turns occasionally, which is crazy because not only are they spitting gravel and rocks and, you know, dirt and dust and debris, but that's the point where they're going to roll into the crowd.
Yeah, that's a huge point, and I think we should say that again unequivocally. If you like to watch races close up, for God's sake, stand on the inside
of
the turn.
Now, on the inside of the turn, because I mean, this is one of those events where there's no fences between you and the cars.
Right.
You know, most places you're 20 or 30 feet away, you know, maybe more in some cases, and there's fences and there's barriers that protect you. In this one, there's nothing at all. So it's really just a matter of how quickly can you duck and run, and that doesn't do any good, as we know. I mean, it's too fast. It just happens too quickly. So a lot of these events are free to go to, so, you know, because these are hundreds of miles long, and, you know, the courses are laid out well, and people know where they're going to be, so you can just park yourself along the way and figure out where, you know, what part of the track you want to see.
Yeah.
Or they may be as little as $10. So now there's a range of cost there, but it's never very much to watch a rally race.
Well, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a lot of bang for the buck.
Yeah.
And, Skylar, I guess you won't have to worry about being one of the fans there too much, because it sounds like you are getting prepared to run some rally cars yourself. And so I want to just say thanks for the suggestion and wish you the best of luck with that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And thanks for the emails. And again, I'm sorry it took so long to get to it, but we did it, and it's pretty interesting stuff, really. I might dig into this a little further.
Yeah, and speaking of digging into further topics, you want to dig into some more listener mail?
I do. Okay, so we've got another comment here from Saul. Remember, very recently, a couple episodes ago, we mentioned Saul. He had listened to our James Bond cars episode, and he mentioned that, you know, there's some companies that are making aftermarket armored vehicles and cool gadgets there. Well, he posted to our blog site a link to the James Bond cars, high speed wrap up from that episode. Mm-hmm. And he sent this link, and I followed the link, and I looked at what's there, and Saul, I'm impressed. This is a company. Oh, go ahead.
This is that list you wouldn't let me see before we went on air.
This is, because there's some surprises here.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a surprise. It's Alpine Armoring Incorporated, and there's some interesting things on this list, and I'll quickly go through them, and we'll be done with it. But there's tire protection, so there's run flat protection for your tires.
Great.
Floor protection, which is either composite or steel. Gun ports.
Gun
ports, like on an armored vehicle.
Wow.
A roof hatch, which you can pop open and, I guess, assume, you know, come out with your guns blaring or whatever.
I always need one of those.
Special power windows, which look like they're about a foot thick. I think that they're probably bulletproof.
Or bullet-resistant, at least.
Wire mesh tailpipe protection, so no one can shove anything inside your tailpipe. Which I thought was interesting. Fire suppressant systems, gas masks, and filters. Air filters for your car.
Yeah.
So you don't breathe in any intoxicants that are sprayed in there. And a couple of the more interesting ones now.
All right.
Bomb jammers, which looks like this big electrical unit that you put in the back of the vehicle. It took up about a third of the back end of an SUV. Huge thing. I don't know what it does, but it's a big bomb jammer device.
It jams bombs.
Sounds
apparently.
Cool.
Yeah.
Electric door handle shocks, which I thought was cool.
That is so cool.
Exhaust fireballs.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Exhaust fireballs. Yep.
Oh,
you can shoot
wow.
exhaust fireballs. I've only got three more here. Oil spill.
Okay.
Smoke screen.
Yes.
And a tack dispensing mechanism, which dispenses tacks onto the road, which always face upwards. So, you know, they're in a kind of like a, looks like a double triangle thing.
Right. I've seen those designs.
Instant flat for the people behind
you. It's like an asterisk.
So, yeah, exactly. Anyways, thought I'd mention that because there's some really cool James Bond-esque type features there that, you know, people might be interested in.
I want to talk more about this, but I have to go right now and follow that link. So,
get
Scott,
your credit card.
Yeah, Scott, thank you so much. I'm going to I'm going to think carefully about this before I do anything to the car. And in the meantime, thanks so much to our listeners for tuning in. You guys, always a pleasure. And be sure to catch us next time with an upcoming episode. But in the meanwhile, if you would like to suggest an episode for us or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.